So can you see my screen?
Yes, we can.
Please okay, and me. Also the and also the cursor, right?
Right. Yes.
Okay, perfect. So this is a talk on learning clause deletion heuristic for SAT solvers via reinforcement learning. Primarily, I'm going to talk about the challenges that we faced and you know some of the negative results that we got. That's where this like the twist comes into play. Because at the end, I can show you some of the results that we got on another setting that was, in fact, really positive. So this is joint work with Gil Letterman and my colleagues and supervisors at University of Toronto and his supervisor at UC Berkeley. The general theme of this talk is going to be the answer to this question, or rather this goal, as to whether or not we can actually apply machine learning techniques to build better SAT solvers that can tackle industrial scale problems, such as the problems that you see in SAT competition. So this is the order of the topics that I'm going to cover. So first, I'm going to give some high-level introduction to SAT heuristics, and then I'm going to discuss some of the earlier efforts in this vein. And the majority of the talk, I'm going to discuss the challenges of gaining wall clock performance improvement for SAT, and discuss how we try to tackle this problem. And finally, not to end on a grim note, I'll talk about the positive results that we got, as opposed to just the negative with the clause deletion. So let's start. The first backtracking algorithm that was applied to SAT was DPLL, where you gradually extend a partial assignment by selecting new variables to branch on. And this results in, some of the clauses to shrink to, only contain one literal, at which point that literal is a unit clause and has to be propagated. Its value has to be propagated into your clause database. And, this in turn might cause new unit clauses to be generated. And you do this until there are no more unit clauses there. And then you select another variable to branch on. And you do this process until either you solve the entire problem, you get a satisfying assignment, or until you reach a conflict, which means one of the clauses is falsified, at which point you have to backtrack and try your luck some other way. The conflict-driven clause learning type of solvers, they combine this backtracking scheme with what we call clause learning. So instead of just backtracking, they learn what was the variables that were assigned to reach that conflict, and they analyze this conflict, and they, without getting too much detail, they learn a new clause which would prevent you from doing the same mistake further down the road. So they learn this new clause and they add it to their clause database. And this way, they're basically pruning the search space so that you have to do much less work. These CDCL solvers are now the de facto solver types that are pursued by the community. And there are several different heuristics that these solvers are based on. Two of the most important ones, though, are these two, the clause deletion heuristic and branching heuristic. So the clause deletion heuristic deals with the fact that as you build more and more, as you learn more and more clauses, you're pruning the search space, and that's great. But at the same time, you're exponentially adding more clauses to your clause database. So every time you want to do unit propagation, you have to do much more work. And given that the majority of the lifespan of a solver is spent doing your propagation, then you're bringing the performance of your solver down to a halt by adding that many clauses. So what Audemars and Simon did in 2009 was to devise a scoring mechanism for the clauses called literal block distance, or LBD, where you assign the score to all of your clauses, and then you do aggressive clause deletion. Every, you know, let's say 20,000 conflicts or so. And what you do is that you sort the clauses based on this LBD score, and you get rid of, you know, the lower half of the clauses. So you're kind of like striking the balance between the like keeping everything and deleting everything. So that's the clause deletion heuristic. And again, without getting into too much details, branching heuristics, which is based on VSIDs, or, you know, EVSIDs, the more recent version of it, is that it assigns, it deals with which variable to branch on next. And they do this by assigning some kind of an activity score to every variable. So the activity score of a variable is higher if, or rather it's bumped, in other words, if that activity is participating more in conflict clauses. And then every once in a while, you decay the periodically decay the activity of all the other variables. So these are the two heuristics, and most of the earlier work in applying ML to SAT, they were trying to, you know, improve either of these two heuristics, primarily branching heuristic. So the application of machine learning to SAT dates actually back to actually Holger Huss's work, who gave a talk today, back when he was at UBC, which is portfolio-based SAT solvers. But here in this slide, I'm only including some of the more recent effort in this vein. So before I met with Gil and started working on this, him and Marcus Rabi and Sanjit Seshia from Berkeley, they worked on this learning heuristic for quantified Boolean formulas, which are another type of problems in the propositional problems domain, QBF solvers, and they got really good results. They applied reinforcement learning to learn branching heuristic there, and you know, they were able to improve the performance of their solver cadets. And then we met with Gil, and we started working on applying similar techniques to SAT. And around the same time, Daniel Salsom came with his idea of Neurosat, which basically what he did was to train a GNN to predict the satisfiability of an instance. And what he did was to assign a probability score to the problem, whether or not it's satisfiable or not. And it was an interesting result, but the problems that he was tackling were really tiny compared to industrial scale problems. More importantly, the solver was not really designed to be a complete solver, meaning that, you know, SAT solvers, as you know, with 100% probability, it would tell you whether or not a problem is satisfiable or not, if it halts. And then later on, as we were working on this problem, several other people and groups started working on this. You know, Neurocore, again by Daniel, came out, where they trained in a supervised way again, and this time they targeted branching heuristic, but this time they embedded their model in a CDCL-based SAT solver. So these two work, the GQSAT and Neurocore, they actually used a CDCL-based solver, and the machine learning model was simply a module within that CDCL-based solver. And last year at NeurIPS, there was this other work that used Reinforce, which is what we were using as well, but they were focusing on WalkSAT type of solvers, which have not really been the standard. So people no longer in the SAT community use WalkSAT-based solvers to build their solvers. So what I want to point out here is that all of these solvers were working on branching heuristic, and your answer to these questions on the left-hand side determines your style of solver. And, you know, it might lead to your salvation or to your doom, as we're going to see later on. So let me talk broadly about some of the challenges that one faces when building solvers that depend on machine learning. So if you want to go the supervised way, i.e. offline training, there are two challenges with that. First, a solver is a dynamic process, and the changes to the heuristic directly affects the landscape of future observations. So if you do offline training and you improve on your heuristic, as soon as you apply that heuristic, you're now in a completely different regime in terms of the features that you're going to observe. And those features are most likely different than the feature values are going to be most likely different than the ones that you trained on. So this kind of hinders your model to go really, really far. And the other issue is that because you're building a training set, you have to basically run the solver up to a point and then stop it and, take a snapshot. And basically, in order to train your heuristic, you have to come up with some other sort of surrogate labeling mechanism. So even though you want to reduce, for example, the number of steps that it takes your solver to solve a problem, or, you want to reduce the wall clock time, you have to come up with a surrogate labeling mechanism for this offline training. This is these two challenges are resolved if you apply reinforcement learning, which is an online training mechanism. So you better capture the dynamic nature of the solver, and it also allows you to devise a reward signal, a reward function that directly optimizes towards the desired metric. You know, whether it's the number of decisions or the runtime or something else. So that's the design decision that we made. We focused on RL to tackle this first problem. The other problem, so RL itself is not free of problems. The problem of applying RL to SAT is that the rollouts of the industrial instances would take hours, right? Minutes to hours long, and that's really not feasible. So what you can do, there are several ways that you can tackle this problem. One of the ways is to synthesize smaller SAT formulas that are amenable to this kind of online training. So you want your synthesized SAT formulas to have to be small enough so that your rollouts are fast. But at the same time, you don't want them to be too small, because in that case, they're really losing their effectiveness. They kind of lose the structural properties of real industrial instances. So you have to strike a balance here if you're going to synthesize your training set. So what we did initially was to take the industrial problems that we wanted to solve and then actually solve them with glucose, the training set. Solve them with glucose or with whatever solver that you want, and then take a partial assignment from the model that glucose comes up with if the problem is satisfiable, and then we would add a partial assignment, a subset of the variables as units to the instance. So that way we are kind of like pruning the problem. We're making it small enough to be amenable to online training, but at the same time it would hopefully preserve some of the structural properties of the problem. And the other solution that was done in a paper that came out 2 months ago or so, done by Jesse Han, who's also in the conference, was to come up with this nice surrogate reward that allowed him not to wait until the end of solving the problem, so that he solved this sparsity problem of us having to wait until the end of the solving. He solved this problem by devising this surrogate reward. So basically, he can terminate his episode as he wishes, whenever he wants, and then he has this surrogate reward that he used later as a reward signal for his reinforcement learning algorithm. So these are two of the solutions. There are other solutions, and you know, in our later work with we came up with another solution. But here we focused on simplifying the problems. The other problem is the applicability of or feasibility of using GNNs on industrial scale problems. So if you are building the graph of an industrial scale instance, the graph is huge. So if you want to do inference over that graph, it's going to take a long time. So you might really lose the benefits of really using machine learning if you want to do inference that way. So one of the solutions is to either crop the problem graph, you know, don't bring everything to the machine learning side, you know, sample the nodes or something like that. And also, you know, extracting the graph each time that you want to do inference over it might really be time consuming in itself, let alone the inference over the graph. So for that, you can probably, you know, take the delta of the updates. So, you know, you learn, you know, this many clauses, just send them over to the machine learning side to do inference over over that. And the other thing that you can potentially do is to partition the graph, use several GPUs, and gain some level of parallelism. The other issue is the performance trade-off during inference. So I kind of alluded to that point just a minute ago. If you focus on branching heuristic, for instance, the solver, a typical solver, is doing millions of those decisions per second, every few seconds. So it's really not feasible to query the machine learning module every single time. Because the forward pass of a neural network is, as we all know, super expensive. So what you can do is to do less frequent queries to the model, make less frequent queries to the model by either doing something like periodic refocusing, which is, you know, if you want to do branching, let's not do the query every time. We'll do it, you know, every, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 or what have you number of branching. And then we query the neural network and we gain some, you know, VSIT scores, some scores that we're going to replace them with for VSIT scores. And we do that periodically. The other route is to take, to focus on a heuristic that by its very nature is called less frequently. And that's what we did. We focused on clause reduction, which is, queried several orders of magnitude less frequently than branching heuristic. Now, if you go the clause reduction way, the other problem that you face is the explosion in the action space. So every time you're learning, you know, 2,000 or, you know, several thousands or so clauses, and then you want to decide which one of these clauses to keep and which one of them to remove. So if you go in a naive way and assign some kind of a Bernoulli distribution to every clause, then if you're applying policy gradients method, you have to inject some kind of a randomness to every one of those Bernoulli decisions. And this randomness, once multiplied by the number of clauses, becomes huge. So you're inducing a huge variance in your gradient estimates. So that's really not desirable. So what we did to tackle this was to come up with something that we call a threshold policy, which effectively is doing classification over the clause database. So you wanna, you know, come up with a threshold with a cutoff point, and you say everything below this cutoff point is going to be deleted, everything above is going to be kept. And then to inject the randomness, you can inject your randomness on that cutoff point, right? So that would depend on the number of features that you have, not the number of clauses that you're working on at any given point. So, given our answers to all of these questions, to all of these challenges, we sort of refined our goal. So now we want to use RL in order to again extract a versatile heuristic. We want to have a heuristic that we can apply across the board, in order to build complete solvers to tackle industrial problems. That was the goal that we focused on, contrary to the prior work that they were working on small, like non-industrial instances. So we wanted to, you know, focus on real problems. So we framed our problem into an MDP, and that MDP, the environment, is effectively the SAT solver. We focused on glucose at the time, but it can really be anything. And every step in our case is equivalent to a garbage collection, or, you know, the clause deletion step. And an episode is basically the interaction of the agent with the environment while solving a random, randomly picked problem from our training set. And we say that an episode is complete if the solver really solves the problem successfully, you know, SAT or unsat, and we say incomplete otherwise. You know, we come up with some termination criteria. You know, we say we only, you know, what the episode length is, this many steps, and then we stop, and we terminate the solver. The observations are basically a set of features that we devised initially, you know, some solver specific features, average trail size, the ratio of the learned clauses to the original problem clauses, and so on, and you know, the histogram of the LBD of the clauses, and so on. And initially, we didn't use DNNs because of the inference penalty that's associated with it. And finally, the reward is the walk clock time, right? We wanted to improve walk clock time. So now, because we're using reinforcement learning, we can use walk clock time as our reward. However, because walk clock time is sort of non-deterministic, you know, it's basically seconds, we used a deterministic operation counter as a surrogate. But this is really actually the wall clock time. We, you know, used some internal solver-specific counter, and this actually turned out to be a great surrogate for the wall clock time. However, having said all of these things and trying so many different combinations of these design choices, we really were not able to achieve any performance gains with respect to vanilla glucose. So this is in this cactus plot, you see that we were not really even able to get to glucose on SAT competition 2018 problems. This is a negative result, and what we conjectured the problem was that the clause deletion is a less direct method to change solvers' behavior. So contrary to branching heuristic, where you directly change the course of the action of the solver, the clause deletion is changing the clause database. And you know, it affects the solver's behavior down the line, but it's a less direct measure, less direct method to do so. And the other thing is that LBD is actually performing really well. So the ceiling of improvement was really not that high for us. So the legroom that we had was really not that big. And as a result of that, the better policy that we devised, you know, we were doing better in terms of the number of steps. But because we were doing this queries to the model, the benefits didn't really amortize over time, so they were not really covering the penalty the penalty of querying the model. So these are some of the conjectures that we had, and again, to, you know, sort of not end on a negative note, I have, you know, a few other slides to also shamelessly plug our other work, which is under review right now, this learning branching heuristic for propositional model counting work. So we switched gears, and we used our framework this time to target the model counting version of SAT or SharpSAT. So sharp set, the difference between sharp set and set is that instead of asking the question of whether there exists a satisfying assignment to a problem, we want to ask how many such satisfying assignments exist. So as you can tell, this is at least as difficult as the original SAT problem, and in practice, it really is. And so the problems that we're dealing with here are much smaller than that of SAT in the sharp SAT community. So, you know, right off the bat, you're getting smaller problems. That's great. And aside from that, the way that sharp SAT algorithm works is that you assign a few variables and you effectively shatter the problem into several smaller subgraphs, or what we call components. And if you can find the number of satisfying assignments of these components, then you can multiply those numbers and get the model count of the entire problem. So not only you started with smaller graphs, even that graph is going to be shattered into even more smaller. And so GNN is all of a sudden super feasible here. This time we learned our lesson and we targeted branching heuristic. I mean, you can probably do clause deletion here as well, but that's the route that we took. And this time, instead of applying policy gradient, we adopted evolutionary strategy. And this is very desirable in our case for two reasons. Primarily, ES injects that randomness that you need for exploration in your MDP. It adds the randomness in the weight space as opposed to the action space. And the weight space is much smaller than the action space. And the other thing is that it's also independent on the number of clauses and variables that you have. So if you remember for the clause deletion, as you increase the number of clauses down the road, if you wanted to apply this randomness over the action space, then that was dependent on the number of clauses that you had. Whereas here, you're just injecting it over the weight space of your policy, effectively. And the less interesting benefit, just a minor advantage, is that you don't have any backpropagation if you apply ES. And lastly, we went distribution specific. So we no longer want to come up with a versatile heuristic. We want to target a family of problems and process that creates that family of problems to generate smaller instances. So we want to create smaller instances for the training so that our rollouts are faster. And then we can also generate bigger, larger problems. And those are the ones that we're really interested in. And we claim that this is really not an unreasonable assumption in industry. So if you are an industry that requires to, you know, solve some large problems, let's say, you know, some planning problems, you first have access to that high-level generative process. And second of all, you can oftentimes produce, smaller or larger problems. So that's not really unreasonable. So this scheme can really work in industry. And these are some of the results. I'm going to quickly conclude with this this slide and the next. So here we're showing the results for two of our problems. The first column is showing the number of steps. And as you can see, we are doing much better. So NeuroSharp is our sharp SAT solver, which we built over one of the more famous sharp SAT solvers, which actually is called SharpSAT. So we're doing much better than SharpSAT on these two problems in terms of the number of steps. And that also translates to the wall clock time improvement. And at least at the higher end of the regime. Here, we're doing slightly worse than the SharpSAT, but we attribute this to grossly non-optimized code that we've written. You know, we have C++ code that's calling Python code for the machine learning side. So if you can extract the model bring it to the C++ side, we think that we can actually narrow the gap and really works better than sharp set. The point that I wanted to make is that this result is achieved by training on smaller instances. For example, for cellular, we are working on 6,000 variables and 25,000 clauses, and then we're generalizing upwards to problems of size 25,000 and 100,000 problems, and similarly for grid. And finally, to show the robustness of our model, here we have we show the a percentage of the problems in our test set that were that we were able to solve given this number of steps. So each color corresponds to a particular size of that that problem family. So here in the IID regime, where the training and the test problems are of the same size, we are obviously doing better than sharp set. So the solid line is sharp set, the dotted line is neurosharp. So we're doing better. But what's even more interesting is that as we increase the size of the problems, we maintain our robustness. We're still able to solve the problems, whereas you see a degradation in the performance of sharp set, the vanilla sharp set. And this is more emphasized in this grid world, where you see we have these dashed lines over here as we increase the problem size. But then sharp set is really failing in the higher end of the spectrum. So that's basically it. Thank you very much for listening. I can ask your questions now. So back to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, you've already exhausted not only your time for the talk, but also for the questions. So only something
I'm
very
sorry.
Short.
Yeah, okay.
Very short questions.
I have not so much a question, but just a suggestion for some other work that you might have missed. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
There was a paper published in the conference on theory and practice of satisfiability testing last year. It's a while since I've read it. If you want to ping me, I'll send you the reference. But the basic idea was that I think they got quite a decent success by using DRAP proofs of unsat problems on the industrial scale. And they found that they could get enough information out of those on which clauses were important for producing an unsatisfiability proof.
I think you're talking about the crystal ball work by
Yes. Okay. So you know about this. That's fine.
Yes.
Someone else can ask you a question again.
Right. Sorry. My only comment there is that these supervised tasks, one of the major problems is that if you look at Mata's work, which was a great work, first of all, they used decision trees to as their model, and then they devised a huge set of solver-specific features.
Yeah.
And on top of that, they had to come up with this very intricate pipeline to build their training set. So I think this kind of reinforcement learning-based, GNN-based approach is a kind of like a neater way around it. And the score that they get, the part two score that they got was reasonable, but it wasn't really going extremely better than where they started with. So yeah, we can take that offline. But yes, thank you. I'm aware of that work.
No, it was just I just wondered if you were aware of it. That's all.
Yeah. Thank you.
We're above time for this one, so let's thank Sudan again.
Thank you. And
as the next talk, we will have showed somebody. Can you help?
Hello.
Can you check if you can connect yourself?
Yes.
And can hear you. And so, Joel.